How did you learn to do this? How long have you lived in Florida? They know what you're doing, and they're used to you doing this. And have you ever heard any of them?
Well, everybody who shot horses has hurt some at one time or another. If they say they never had, they've never shot it.
Would it be like cutting a fingernail too close to the point?
That's exactly it. If you were to take x-rays of this horse's limbs, be able to tell the difference. Huh. Exactly alike. Bones are the same, except the horse had what's called an avicular bone in there, which the human does not have. But there are some people now who think that the ridge on the bottom of the usually by the color and the texture of the foot as you're getting down to it. A horse that's shod like this horse here, you can cut a little bit more off than you can if the horse is barefoot. Uh-huh. Because they need the protection. The shoe is actually an extension of the foot, artificial extension of the foot. So it gives the protection to the areas that are trimmed down. Now this horse is go barefoot in the front. I take just about half as much off as I took off.
So you're gonna trim the hooves in the back as well?
Yep.
So they all need trimming no matter whether they wear shoes or not.
Right. The back feet, sometimes when the horse is shot, the back feet actually you don't have to be setting shoes every time.
Discount on that?
No. Dentist don't give a discount for pulling all your teeth. It all costs the same.
I know.
What lets you know that you've done a good job with that horse? What's your criteria for a good chewing tooth?
If he can walk away. Meekness is one of the main things. The problem we have today with a lot of horses is people who are doing them get too fast. It used to be that you spent the time on the horse meekness. Of course, everybody done the same thing. Time wasn't the main factor. What you done. Today, people think, well, I'm going to get through it in 15 minutes and get to my next
stop.
Other people are shoeing in the territory you work.
I ain't got enough that many places to count.
Are they real?
I understand you do a real good job of hot shoeing a horse. What is hot shoeing a horse?
Hot shoeing is a method used years and years ago. Blacksmith and farriers, of course, they're blacksmiths and farriers combined. They take a hot shoe and set it on the horse's foot and do it. Anything else, you got to balance your tires on the car, you got to balance the horse's foot.
So you're measuring it to make sure that they're safe. You
right.
Put off the same wind.
Right. Check the angles.
Now that looks just like that. You go to the shoe store.
Slope of this wall is a bone. If you drew a line down through the center of them bones, it'd be the same slope. This right here, these three bones here, the equivalent of these three bones. Them bones are spaced. These bones have to be spaced. If you leave the toe too long, cut the heel short, which most people do, and then just make it more reach further.
Thank you. listens to you.
Well, it's against me.
Dealing with missing babies. Anytime I have a better on the imported ones that you buy. There are available domestically though.
Yep.
Swiss management of a company that's in the United States, is that? Yeah.
When did the farriers start putting their anvils in a truck and going around?
Oh, probably in the late 40s. There's some places they still don't. population just spread out so much after World War II, and you know, people just didn't have any means of getting them to the forge. In Europe and England, they usually still take them to the forge. There's some areas over there that do travel. There's very few of them.
What exactly is foundering?
Did you ever hit your finger with a hammer?
Close.
Catch it in a car door.
Uh-huh.
That's foundering. Except you ain't walking on the Founder is the death of all the tissue. Top Ferry right in West Texas devised a means of supporting the foot, supporting the bone column with a special shoe he called a heart bar shoe.
Anybody ever tried to develop any sort of technology that would get around shoeing horses the way you do?
Do
laced them on.
What does the owner have to do to maintain those?
Well, the biggest thing is to keep the horse clean and dry air. do. Because as soon as you try something out and it works, everybody's going to see you. Some of them not that way. I had a designed the hard bar shoe for founding horses, and it was written up in the Fairy Journal by a friend of mine out there at Northwest Missouri State University. Real nice little article about how I made the shoe and all, but I was just making the shoe I was making 100 years ago. That was new. It was different than what everybody else was using. Then a fellow in California started making the same shoe, but he didn't make it by cutting it out, except he was having a welder. So I just started buying his shoe.
So ordinarily when you make the shoe, you have to weld it? Interior moisture without getting any external moisture.
Right. Yeah. Of course, within 24 hours, I'll be very often be back down. Anyhow, so just put this on to take it until it's natural.
What is that? That periopha, you
say? Periopha is a kind of garden bag. It comes from periopha band right here. Just rolls down over the foot of the cotton. Never put anything on a horse's foot that you wouldn't use on yourself. Tissue makeup is exactly the same. What
different jobs are you
going to
be doing today?
Reset
Hank here.
Oh, I got one, two in Sarasota County, two, one trim of a young horse. Reset, and I got a reset and trim in Arcadia. I got about four trims in Arcadia. Go with Hardy County.
What do you think are the qualities that make a good farrier? What is it that sets farriers apart, the good ones from the bad ones?
Education. There are people who've been in that business a long time, and anytime you
not going into the farrier business?
Well, the only advice I give is go to one of the reputable schools and spend 2 or 3 years and then apprentice. Just get out and settle down. In England, the apprenticeship program over there, sometimes it lasts 10 years.
Have you had apprentices?
I'm sorry to say I have.
They haven't worked out?
The way they are here, you know, they'll come work for you for 6 months. And then they know more than you. Ooh, they're all. And usually they're right behind you doing something cheaper. Doing the same thing cheaper. Then you find, after a while, people start calling you up. Hey, well, by this time, you got more clients. And these people that deserted you, they want you to come back.
How many of your apprentices are running around the area?
One didn't last. Well, he lasted maybe about 3 months on his own. They're wondering. See, that's the thing. We don't have an apprenticeship program in the country. In France, they only have 2 horse programs. And each course lasts 3 years. And the only way you can get into it is to apply to it. Come back to the state. And we went to a horseshoeing contest.
long vacation.
No long vacation. Ain't gonna make it. Here's one of them innovations in Europe.
People don't even bother with their brood mares. Even though she's a brood mare from the river, her feet are done every 6 weeks. Everyone here is blind to everything. Every 6 months they get their inoculation.
Georgia told her to call me. So I'd rather fix a horse's quarter crack than nail him shoes.
How do you fix that?
Well, there's various ways you have to clean the crack out, get all this debris out of it and all, and then cause tissue. Depending on the location, how you fix it. Mostly, you set some small screw eyes in the foot on angles and lace it with stainless steel feature wire. Like carpentry or electronics or plumbing or something like that. A plumber's apprentice cannot go on a job at all unless he's got a journeyman with him.
So you learn the basics in the Army and then you apprentice for 3 years.
Yep.
Did you learn all aspects of it, of carrier business? Were you apprenticed?
No. Another quote. The farrier instructor there at Northwest Missouri State University, if he lives another 50 years and keeps studying every day, he might know half what he should know. You never learn. Never in a lifetime.
What's the main difference now with what you learned when you apprenticed and how you do things today?
Well, I can't really put your finger on any main difference. You still kind of look the same. Except you got more knowledge now. It's only been the last 15, 20 years that they've really done any research on horses. All they looked at was horses walking. 30% of the horses were no walking, put the heel down first. All humans do. So this is the way the horses gotta walk. When a human is jogging or running, they're up on the ball of their feet. Only until they got this ultra high speed photography where they could watch a horse run and see how that foot hit the ground. And they realized that this was a detriment because of the heel. When a horse's foot leg goes ahead, it retracts the head and then it retracts the ground. It doesn't go out and bam. When a human's walking, they can out and the foot comes back to the ground. It doesn't just go out like that. So this foot come back, the normal foot and the wild horse come down foot flat. And the race horses, they were coming down the toe foot. And then when the horse got the weight loaded on that leg, it slammed that foot. And the toe raised off the ground. And the fetlock joint would actually hit the ground. So we're doing this high-speed photography to study the movement. This was a theory. Like some of the guys say, the race horse and the farrier business and the race industry, the deep in tradition. You don't have to change it. The United States is the only country in the world that allows to raise the moon and shoes and toe grabs and deal stickers and collars. No exception. Nowhere in the world.
And those things irritate them.
That's right. The horse's foot, when they're running, that foot has to be able to move, slide. And the ultra-high-speed photography, they slowed it down. When that leg's extended out there, it just don't extend like this. That foot's on the end of it's going like that. So they hit, and they got a toe grab on the front there. That toe grab hits wrong. They can snap that leg off. another way, you've already got a low heel long toe, and then you put a toe grab on there, the leg's going to throw it more. So you just put more stuff up. Until, like, Dr. Rooney said, I tell them this whole generation of racehorse trainers and stuff die out. In Washington State, they took some racehorses up there, took three of them, and they let the feed go extremely long.
Are there any superstitions that farriers have?
No, not that I know of. There's two things that you'll go to hell for, though.
What are those?
Pounding cold iron and not charging enough. One old boy, and it's proved. An article. In 1848, a few years ago, it cost the horse owner $4 to get four shoes put on his horse. The pay of a congressman in 1848 was $8 a day.
What were you doing there when you were massaging his?
A little acupressure. Sort of. Pick the leg up.
Toolbox come from?
Bring mine down West Palm Beach, right?
Is that to your design, or did I?
No.
Is there a standard?
No, that was his idea. He made several of them, sold them, and he put you in there. I don't know if he made enough money doing that. Selling the boxes to quit, but he just decided he wanted to go back into photography. What did Morris do?
He's doing the illustrations for her writing.
Just about any tool fairy uses anymore has been designed by a fairy.
Are there any tools that you use, though, that are like woodcutter's tools or anything like that that you've adapted to your job?
No, nothing in the woodcutting. $10 woodcutting tools would not do this. I've used.
Then okay, the shoes aren't obviously, but the have to
carry a lot of coal with you. I mean, I suppose that.
A gas bottle with a gauge on it, and just down about 30 or a quarter inch or a quarter full. Of it.
$250 a ton. Mm-hmm. Those things up in there, those are like nails up there in the front of those little plastic doors.
There's nails up on the top there and all them. All the different kinds. You just about got to have them all.
And then this is just a bigger version of that, sort of when you're doing work.
Yeah, that's more like the shoeing box there. A lot of people take the shoeing box to the horse, but I just don't.
How do people find out about you? I guess your number's in the phone book? No?
Yeah, the number's in there, but it ain't got nothing to do about you. I don't have a time.
It's all word of mouth?
So, you get enough that advertising is just a pain. Several of us used to advertise in the horse and pony, because they had a section in there, if you remember the Ferries Association, put it all in this one page. I don't believe anybody ever got a call from me. So we all just quit doing it. Until one of my apprentices is still around here. He took out 4 or 5 ads in the thing. He's going to make a killing out there. The ads cost him more than he probably makes in a week.
Do you ever drive down the road and stop at a stoplight and have somebody pull up next to you and say, hey, I saw in the back of your truck, I got some horses that...
Yeah. Sometimes you get something out of them. Most of the time they take your car and they smash you.
How do you get most of your new, do you get many new clients?
Yeah, they just call the house. I don't go looking for them. But I like to take a day off once in a while.
Is that hard to do? I mean, do you actually have more customers than time? Or how does that work out? I mean, do you use more customers? Or?
You never really have more customers and time. It's just the accommodating is the problem. I mean, if you could go right down the road and say, well, I got this one, this one, this one, this one today, and you went right down the road and done each one of them, a lot of them, so much time, it'd be all right. But you got 4 of them to do today, and the night before one of them calls up and says, I can't be there. So then you got a problem. You got to get them in another day, which is already full. Or you go someplace and they ain't there. Or you go someplace and instead of doing 2 horses, they got 6 they want done. So it's hard to accommodate people. And it's hard to get people to realize that if you're 15 minutes late at this job and this job, that means you're going to be an hour late at the third one. And they say, oh, we're going to wait so long. If you ain't there, we're going to get somebody else. Well, fine, that's the way you feel, again. So a veterinary told me one time, up there in Old Cali, he was a pretty good guy. He said he got out of vet school and went in with an equine practitioner. And he said the first job he had was to go out to this Arabian barn and draw Coggins blood on one of the horses they were shipping out of state. And he said it had been raining all night. And he says, there I was having a brand new truck with the bed on it. And he says, I drove up to the barn. He says, right in front of the barn to the side was a pen. He said, there were 3 horses in that pen. And he said, there was mud in there and it pouring down rain. And he said, I got out and said, I ran up to the barn. A woman met me there. And he says, boy, she was mad. She looked at her watch. And the first thing she said to him, she says, started naming the horses in the pen out there. And she said, I want shoes on this one and on this one, just trim the other one. And the halters are on the gate. And he says, ma'am, he says, I'm the veterinarian, I'm not the horse shearer. She says, oh, she says, I should have known you're only 2 hours late. She said, your horse is in the cross ties. He's all cleaned up. Now, this is the attitude. The horse shearer, in the pouring down rain, probably had to catch horses in the last place. And now she got the veterinary's horse all clean waiting for him, but the horse shearer still got to go out there in the rain and catch the horses that he's supposed to do. So,
sometimes not much respect.
There's not. A lot of people, you know, they know what the situation is, especially if somebody's in business for themselves. A person in business for themselves, they know that you ain't going to be on time every place. But the people who've got nothing to do, they're the ones who give you the hassle. You know, they're in there watching TV. So what difference does it make if you're an hour late? They just watch an hour more TV, but oh no, you ain't there. You can always use more clients. And, you know, it's always a changing situation. You never keep clients. There's always somebody coming along who's going to do it cheaper and they're going to switch to it. Like I say, then they find out that this cheaper is not better. And they start calling back up, and there you got the problem of trying to get them back in the situation. It's everybody's problem. I don't care if they're good or bad, they still got the same problem. And it's any business. The veterinarians have got just as bad, because the veterinary says, well, I'm going to be there. He looks on his book and says, I can be there at 10 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, he's got an appointment, which he knows is not going to be no problem. So he's going to be there at 10 o'clock. Well, he gets that appointment, he's got a problem. And it may be noon before he can get away from that first appointment. He says, oh, he ain't no good, he don't show up. So it's a situation, you damn if you do, damn if you don't. If you leave the problem you got to go take care of the other one, then the people that got the problem are going to hate you. And if you go to the other one, you're going to be hated because you're late.
A little bit earlier, we're talking about young people or younger people who are getting into this business. And I hear you talking about a lot of younger people who just aren't doing it the way they should, maybe. But are there some who really respect this?
Yeah,
this job, and are doing good work and are doing it the way it should.
That's right, they are. It's like any situation you get. Young people, they got to do something and they think something's easy, so they jump into it. And they find out that it ain't. The hours are long. I leave the house at about 8 o'clock every morning. Usually going to be home at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. The physical abuse that they take is something. Most of them, any young person, you know, they are not going to be defeated. So this horse is jerking, pulling around. They're going to hang on that horse. Well, that's jerking and pulling them all to pieces, too, and they feel it later. That's why most of them drop out of it after 2 or 3 years, because they just can't take it anymore. We've got people who, in the association, good young farriers. But after 7 years, one of them said, I ain't going to do it no more. He become a fireman. He works 24 hours, he's off 48. And there's so many of them that are just, they do good work, but they just get burned out.
So do you see a problem in keeping good farriers?
Yeah. The problem, I think, in keeping good farriers is the schools. There's no regulation on the schools. And like I say, a 2-week course, you're not going to learn that. Because I've had some kids that have turned out to be pretty good horse shearers have gone to some of these schools. And like one of them told me, he said, we got there at night, he says, we went into our dormitory. He said, next morning come out, and the guy told us, there's some horses in them pens, go get them and chew them. He says, no instruction, go get them and chew them. So, you know, some of them schools, they have a deal where you got a big horse ranches around the area, and they just bring all their horses in there, so they get them done for nothing. But this is not training anymore. And you got to have a knowledge that goes beyond how to nail a shoe and horse.
So you advocate the apprenticeship programs like
yep.
you went through?
That's right. I mean, this is nationally advocated. All the farriers in the country that are in, you know, professional farriers say this is what we got to do. You can't have a person going out there and working with you for 6 months and taking off and saying, well, I know more than he does. They got to have an apprenticeship program where these guys have got to stay with you for at least 2 years. And then if they do leave, they cannot practice in that immediate area. This is much like anything else. You got a dog grooming business and somebody works for you there. They stay for so long, decide to leave, well, 3 years before they can ever open another shop in that area. Now they can go work for somebody, but they can't open their own. And it's the only way you're going to get barriers to be accepted as professionals. Because, you know, it's a professional business. There are a lot of professionals in it, top-rate people. But they're not accepted as professionals, except through, by themselves, I mean, amongst themselves. And the American Association of Equine Practitioners just now is starting to accept barriers on equal basis. You say, you know, they was, for years there, the veterinary and the farrier never got along. The veterinary always knew more than the farrier did. And of course, the farrier figured he knew more than the veterinary did. In the last few years, there's been a liaison between the AACP and the AFA. And now they're working together. And we're noticing that too in some of these new veterinaries coming out. They're not so book bound anymore. We were taught this, and this is the way it is. A lot of the new vets, younger vets, are coming out and say, hey, let's talk about this, find out. And that's a big step forward.
What is it, you know, what sort of qualities do young people or anybody sort of have to do this? I mean, obviously the apprenticeship program would help and education, but what, you know, it seems like it takes a pretty particular kind of person to do this kind of work.
Well, I don't know what you say would be the qualities, because there are some farriers I know in the association that are real good who are school teachers, auto mechanics. We got one farrier up there in Georgia. I mean, he's one of the tops right now as far as leg balance. He gives lectures on all these big association meetings. He worked for McDonnell Douglas, aeronautical engineer.
Do you think patience is one of the biggest things you need to have?
Well, that's the biggest thing in any business. I mean, you can't go flying off the handle like a lot of people do. If you run into a problem, take your time. See if there's some way of surmounting the problem. If there ain't, find somebody that knows how to do it. This is another thing that the Farriers Association is real good about. If I run into some kind of problem that I've never run into before, I can get on that telephone, I can call dozens of top horseshoes all over the country, and I found out about it. I had a horse that came down from Georgia. This has been a founded horse, and the woman told me he had a special shoe on, and she told me what they called it in Georgia. And I'd never seen one exactly like it. I've seen shoes of that type made a little bit different for a different purpose, and she told me about this shoe in Georgia had helped design this shoe, so I called them. I know them pretty well. You boys up here in Georgia got something you're trying to keep from us? Oh, what do you mean? I told them about shoes. I said, I didn't have nothing to do with that. Well, she mentioned your name. I didn't have nothing to do with that. So I didn't think more of it. I was talking to Bernie Chapman out there in Lubbock, and he was telling me about this shoe. That he went down to Pasadena and took off the horse. He said, this horse is dead lame. I said, I never seen monstrosity that was on. And he started to describe it. I said, oh, that's such and such a shoe. He said, you seen one? I said, yeah, I took one off. Found his horse last week. He said, good. He said, I'm sure glad to know what the name of it is. He says, I called it the killer. But the communication is real good amongst farriers. Now, it used to be 25, 30 years ago, we're working on some horses here, another horse here come up, I'd quit. Everybody, I mean, nobody ever showed anybody how to do nothing unless you was working with them. If you was an apprentice, then fine, you stayed there. But if another horse here come up, everything stopped right then. Everything you done was a big, dark secret. And them days is over with. Because we got, now we have the International Farriers Association, which includes all of Europe. In 85, we had farriers at the convention from Israel, Saudi Arabia, Germany, Australia, New Zealand, was Canada, the United States, United Kingdom, France, Denmark. I mean, they come everywhere. This is the only way you're ever going to get ahead. But the thing is, we got to have more people who are shoeing horses attending these things and becoming certified farriers. And the only way that this is going to happen is for the horse-owning public to demand it. We can't go out and grab them by the arm and make them certified and join. If the horse-owning public says, hey, we ain't going to use you unless you're certified, then they're going to, it's going to aid the horses. And it's going to weed out the ones that ain't competent. This is any business, you got to get rid of the incompetent.
I guess as long as you've got horse owners and horse masters, then you're going to get the ones who are willing to cut the corners. And
that's right. That's exactly right. A lot of them's attitude is, well, we bought the horse for the kids for Christmas, and that's it. Well, I don't need it anymore. And I'm saying, well, what's trimming a hoof? I can do that. So I'll just get so-and-so who'll do it for $4. The horse is suffering, but they don't care.
Do you have to love the animals, too?
Yeah, I guess you gotta. You gotta have respect. You don't have to love them. Because some of them are real hard. But you got to have respect as you do with it. if you got to command respect, too. I mean, you can't just dive in there and go to hurting the horse. Cause you ain't going to do that horse again. Because if you hurt him one time, he's going to, sometime he's going to get you. And when he gets you, it's going to be permanent. But
they remember, they've got good memory.
That's right. People say they're dumb, but they ain't. I think the biggest thing you need is common sense, horse sense. That's it. You're working with an animal who outweighs you five times over and whose brain is always working. And if you treat him right with a little bit of respect, then he's going to treat you right. But if you try to boss him around, you got to remember that if you're under him, you got a hold of him, and all he's got to do is just rear up and you're gone. We had one kid up there in Georgia. He's a right good horse here up there in Hillsborough County. He was working on a draft horse, and this boy don't stand about that. Everybody was lined up, and he was down on the end. And then there was dead silence. Everybody's looking around to see what happened. Somebody on Rusty tried to bust the concrete with his head. Go down there, his head split wide open. He done something that horse didn't like, and that horse just picked his foot up and just flipped him up in the air, and he dropped on his head. Number one, he shouldn't have done this horse part. This one thing to learn, the body of the horse, don't work. Working on that before that leg got killed. He pulls up, he's not going to raise you, because this horse weighs 1,900 pounds. You're like a fly to a founding horse you're working on. You cannot drive a nail without hurting that horse, so you always hold it out here instead of getting between your legs. But he was straddling that leg, and that horse just picked his leg up. Went to the hospital, everybody figured out the end of his horse here. He's back at it.
And doesn't get under the horses.
They still got it. I guess that's another thing, you need a hard head. But it's a pleasing business. It's a good feeling when you see a crippled horse come up to you and you do what you think best for him. When he walks off, he's walking safe. That's worth a lot. And you got to have some kind of dedication and a little bit of knowledge before you can do it. And the only way, like I said, the only way to do it is get the horse owners to demand that these people get certified. Because if they get certified, they join the association, then they're going to be encouraged to keep going to the seminars and clinics.